This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Hello, my name is Catherine, and this is episode 11 of our class podcast, Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. My assigned verses were lines 531 to 558. To provide a little context, in this scene, we see Creon has been confronting Antigone about how she decided to defy the law that he had announced, and she buried the corpse of her brother Polynices. So prior to the start of my passage, we see Creon calling to have Ismene brought to them from within the palace because he wants to question her alongside her sister. And then what follows is a dynamic and very heated exchange between the sisters, in which Ismene tries to stand in belated solidarity with Antigone, and Antigone passionately refuses to share any of the responsibility or the credit with Ismene. What I focused on during my Teacher of the Day experience was the way that we see the characters of Antigone and Ismene change, especially since this is the first time we've seen them interact, or Ismene at all, even, since the prologue. Their characterization develops significantly here, and we have to question if their appearance here in the exchange enhances the characterization for each of them that we've seen so far. So, does it cement the image of Antigone or Ismene in our heads that we have already developed? Or if somehow the portrayal here changes our previous perspectives, or at least complicates it? Are their actions in line with what we would expect? And if so, or if not, what do we do with this? So, Creon sets the stage for the sisters' exchange by expressing his regret about the fact that he had unknowingly been essentially harboring traitors in his own house. But here, he uses the word traphon in line 553, which means to raise or to nurture. And I thought that this was interesting because it inherently possesses a familial undertone. And so by using this word, Creon predicts the issue that it will be the prominent problem in the exchange that follows, in which we see the tension that the idea of family adds to Ismene and Antigone, and the conflict as a whole, really. Everything comes back to this idea of family in one way or another. It also reminds us of how complex the idea of family is in the Antigone. It isn't just Antigone and her family against the world. Rather, it's Antigone sticking up for her family against her family. Various people that share some kind of relationship with her through their blood, they can be seen as either antagonistic to her or, as we see as depicted by Ismene, wishing to be helpful, even if it might come at the cost of her own values. In the prologue, Ismene is seen as cowardly and weak-willed, and she also seems to lack a sense of devotion to her family, which Antigone stresses heavily. Ismene yields to civil law rather than the moral code that Antigone is following herself. This passage develops Ismene in a really interesting way. Ismene comes out having resolved to shoulder the burden of responsibility and Creon's punishment with her sister. So then, we need to examine how this figures into the image of her that's already been established for us. Is this the Ismene that we saw in the prologue? She seems to differ, and she has steeled herself, and she now has resolved to die alongside her sister, committing to her family in a way that she refused to do previously. And she comes off as even rather brave, since she has changed and decided to follow through with Antigone once the situation has reached its worst. Which is, you know, the opposite of leaving when the going gets tough. But at the same time, does this again show us the fickle Ismene that we've known all along? In the beginning, she refuses to help Antigone bury Polynices, and then she bends a little bit and says that at least if Antigone must do it, she should do it quietly, and Ismene would keep it under wraps as well to protect her sister. So even within the prologue, the audience has already been shown how Ismene, in trying to compromise with her sister, in a way compromises her own priorities as well. She considers the issue of civil disobedience to be of the utmost importance, But toward the end of the prologue, this absolute obedience to authority lessens as she begs Antigone to at least break the law quietly. In this passage as well, she comes out prepared to die, but as Antigone denies her, she wonders how she'll live if she's been abandoned by Antigone. Kai tis bios moisu lelemene philos, in line 548. Which indicates that already, she sees the possibility that death might not be in store for her right this minute, unlike her strong-willed sister, who says that she has already died and chosen to die. No matter how strong Ismene's determination to die might seem right then, the fact that she's even considering life without Antigone shows a weakening in her resolve. She's obviously not set in any one particular way, as Antigone, or even Creon, is. So is her resolution to die and take blame just adding on to her seemingly unstable sense of morality, even if it seems like she's resolving to do the right thing to us? I found this scene made Ismene a little more real, a little bit more human, and endearing to me personally. You can tell that she's eager to try to right whatever wrongs she perceives, or whatever wrongs Antigone has convinced her she did, even if this means stepping outside the realm of civil obedience that she was so eager to remain within. So I felt that Ismene became more sympathetic in this scene, and perhaps she feels the most real at times. She is fearful, and understandably so. Antigone, on the other hand, maintains the resolve that she's had throughout the entirety of the play thus far, and will continue to have throughout the rest of the play. In this, we don't see any change. But the interesting development with Antigone is the way that this very resolve and stubbornness starts to perhaps conflict with the same moral code that she's advocated for the entire time. Antigone, who prioritizes family and the laws of the gods, disowns her sister, refusing to forgive her after she attempts to try to repent for her previous inaction. So, does this seem hypocritical of Antigone? She didn't disown her brother Polynices when he was waging war with their brother Eteocles, and Ismene's inaction seems, to me at least, to be a lesser crime than that. Does Antigone think that Ismene's refusal to help is worse than her brothers battling and killing each other? Or does Antigone's moral code just seem to apply more to the dead than the living? And if this is the case, how does that make us feel about her? If family is so important to Antigone, how can she so easily and so completely reject her sister, the righteous protagonist that we have seen thus far, seems to isolate herself not only from her sister, but from the audience as well. This is a very harsh scene, and it depicts a kind of coldness against Ismene and Antigone that works alongside the heated passion that she'd exhibited throughout the play beforehand. Ismene begs Antigone, Metoi kasenete, mati masis to me uthanen tesun soith ton thanonta thagmnisai. Sister, at least do not prevent me to die with you, and to cleanse or honor our dead brother, in lines 544 to 45. In this line, Ismene pleads with Antigone by appealing to the two beliefs that her sister holds so dear. She returns to the issue of family, and also the funeral rites that Polynices is properly due as their brother. But Antigone, as one would expect, doesn't budge, and denies her sister relentlessly. So while Antigone maintains the personality and attitude that we've seen in her consistently, her values actually seem to hinder herself from being the sympathetic one in this particular passage. Meanwhile, Ismene does step out of her comfort zone. Although perhaps she maintains her role as the inactive one, in that she doesn't actually follow through with dying alongside Antigone, she still pushes the bounds of her character that had been established in the prologue. Regardless, I think that this passage in particular significantly makes the audience reconsider, or at least really think about where their sympathies are and should go at this point in the play. Teaching the Antigone was a really cool experience because to prepare for it, it requires you to look so closely and become so familiar with your assigned text that you can be prepared to cover all your bases while you're teaching. So when you look at each word so carefully, there's a lot more to get out of something as small as an individual word. For example, in class we talked about two particular words used by Ismene that literally, had implications of ship or sailing imagery, although this wasn't the actual context in which it was used. The words amoroteo in line 536, which is mainly used to mean agree with Antigone, but really means something along the lines of pull with me, which derives from the word rotheo, according to Milner, which is related to the noise made by oars, as well as the word sumplun in line 541, used by Antigone to mean a partner or companion, but literally translated as a shipmate, or someone voyaging with another. I tied this back to Creon's ship of state metaphor, and what this means for Ismene's character. Is she appropriating Creon's metaphor in order to distinguish herself from him? Or is this an unknowing way in which Ismene actually likens herself to him, thus justifying Antigone's pushing her away? So we discussed this in class, and it was a productive discussion. The students offered interpretations and ideas of these two words on top of whatever I thought of prior, and enriched it even further. So by knowing that that meaning lies underneath, we can better get an idea of what else is at work underneath the surface, because it's likely that that kind of thing would have been much more apparent to an audience of ancient Greeks than it is to a modern audience such as us today. There can be so much depth within a single word that we might not necessarily get while we're translating at the surface level, but they would have known, likely, the entire time that there is this naval imagery beneath these words, and that would have solidified these meanings to them right away, and we have to dig for it. And so in teaching the Antigone, I had to do this digging, and it ended up making it an incredibly enriching experience, much more so than I think I would have gotten just by translating the passage to see what was happening in it as far as the plot goes. It's very easy to skip over these small details, but they can be so crucial to the ultimate theme of the play. So, that's all I've got. My name is Catherine, and this is episode 11 of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. If you liked what you heard, please feel free to leave comments below, and thank you so much for listening.